Welcome to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, the RNIB's technology show for blind and partially sighted people. See technology differently. Now, here's your hosts, Stephen Scott and Robin Christofferson.
Oh, hello, hello, hello. How are you all? Lovely to be here once again. Yes, thank you so much for tuning in to Tech Talk. This is the RNIB Technology Show. We are quite literally, Robin Christofferson, worldwide.
I'm not that wide.
Well, maybe I am, but let's not go there. Let's not start the show in a negative, Robin, for goodness sake. How are you this week?
I'm well. I'm really well, thanks.
Yeah, I'm liking this getting close to the microphone thing you're doing. It's kind of working for me.
I'm new to this game.
Yeah. So am I. Trust me on that. Sometimes I wake up and I think to myself, I can't believe I do this for a living. It is absolutely insane. I will be honest, my wife has often said, neither can I. Anyway, moving on. Right, so we've got lots to get through. Coming up this hour, we're going to be hearing from David Woodbridge. Now, he is a star in the world of technology, isn't he? I mean, he's been known for lots and lots of different podcasts that he's created. Of course, his most popular one at the moment is IC, which we're going to hear a bit about. But today he's going to be talking about something which fascinates me, and that is accessibility around watches, Android watches in particular. I don't think, Robin, we've ever heard about accessibility properly on these watches, but we're going to hear it here. So that's good,
yep,
isn't it? So we're going to get into that. Also, tons and tons of your emails. And I say we go worldwide because this week we have comments from all around the world, from you, and emails to match as well. So we've got so much to get through here on this week's Tech Talk. So stick around for all of that. If you want to drop your feedback to us, then we have our mailbox, which is quite simply techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Myself and Robin will endeavour to answer the questions. What I mean is Robin will do all the work. Because he has the brains. He is the brains of the operation, and I am the looks. Yes.
What number bus was that?
I think that was number 43 this week, the bus you were flung under. Yeah. So, shall we get into it then? David Woodbridge is a man who is well-known for his podcast, but perhaps more well-known for having every kind of piece of technology you can think of. And that is because his job is the... And let me get this right, Robin. He is the National Assistive... what was the rest of it?
Technology Advisor for Vision Australia.
See, I told you, we do the show 50-50, right? So I do the beginning of this title, you do the other half of it. That makes sense. Well, he's here to talk about Samsung, their new Galaxy Watch, and also the new S10 Plus more. Really glad to have you here on the programme, David.
You're very welcome.
It is great to have you here because we are very interested in one particular aspect of your interests at the moment. And I mean, there are many, don't get me wrong. I mean, we could empty your brain all over the desk here and find some very interesting nuggets, I'm sure. But the one that I think our listeners and I in particular have a great interest in is the Samsung Galaxy Watch that you've been playing with, an Android watch. Now, I've heard, David, that these are accessible. The question is, are they usable?
That's the question I've got too, because when anybody says to me that something's accessible, I ask exactly the same question. What does it actually mean in practice? So I went in my wisdom and actually bought one, because that's what you do when you have to test stuff. And I must say I'm pleasantly surprised by how accessible the internal applications are. And I say that on purpose. They mainly all work. With the built-in screen reader, which is called Voice Assistant, the same you get on the Samsung phones and, of course, the TVs. Excuse me. And initially, I thought this is going very well until I hit a few little interesting bits and pieces. And one of the ones which I keep mainly complaining about every second demo that I do on the Galaxy Watch at the moment, they've got this lovely little dialog box that pops up and actually says, oh, hello, you're using Voice Assistant. You can't use this app with Voice Assistant. And then it stops.
This first-party app, this app provided by Samsung.
Yes. Well, actually, it does it on the Samsung app. So the Samsung Flow, which I believe is the multiple workout app, definitely doesn't work. the timer app, which Samsung produces, and also the stopwatch app, they both don't work because they come up with this block. And I think what Samsung's trying to do is trying to say, well, look, don't waste your time in apps that we think are not accessible. The problem is, and as I show in one of my Galaxy Watch demos, the timer app is actually fully accessible. So I don't know what algorithm they're using to determine what accessible is. So if you use Bixby, as in the similar one to Siri and what else we got, Google Home and blah, 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 then you can still launch the app and it bypasses that blocking message. So things like Spotify, for example, the premium version for the watch, you can actually use that. There are some unlabeled buttons, but you can still use it. So that's the first thing I discovered with this sort of can't use this application because you're running voice assistant. I'd prefer to be a user that says, okay, well, if I want to give this app a go and work out what the unlabeled buttons are, then I should be able to do that.
Have you used an Apple Watch?
Oh, an Apple Watch? I'm completely outraged now. That's it.
Well, actually, you two are kindred spirits in as much as if something is produced by a technology company, then it ends up in your hands.
Correct. Mm. That's exactly right. Sitting on my desk in front of me, I have 5 Apple Watches. So,
5?
Yes, I do have an Apple Watch.
Right, okay. I suppose I'm wondering what the comparison is. And I know people hate when I ask that question because, but in this occasion, you know, I guess the experiences are fairly similar, quite a basic operating system over 2 separate devices. How do they compare?
Okay, well, number one is the moment is I can use a lot more apps on the Apple Watch than I can with the Galaxy Watch. Now, by default, the Galaxy Watch seems to have hundreds and probably not even thousands, probably thousands of watch faces, which you can download and use, which, of course, we know that the Apple Watch doesn't. The apps that are available in general for the Galaxy Watch are not very good if you look on the sort of the mainstream tech news items, that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. And most of them I've tried to download and use, I get that lovely, you can't use this app because we think it's not accessible. Whereas on the Apple
Watch...
That's weird. Yeah, so whereas on the Apple Watch, I can have access to lots of apps and some of them may work and some of them may not. And I certainly don't get any messages from the Apple Watch saying you can't use this app because you're using VoiceOver. The other thing I've noticed, and I've had this Galaxy Watch now for, I think it's coming up to about 2.5 weeks, and it's slowing down with Voice Assistant, I think. So I've had to restart it probably every 4th or 5th day because when I wake it up, it's been gradually taking a lot longer for the Voice Assistant to kick back in again. So this afternoon, for example, I turned it on and I thought, well, I'm not going to be an impatient blind person. I will wait. And I waited about 4 minutes and then it finally talked to me. And I was like tapping on, well, I wasn't that impatient. I was tapping on the screen as we do just to make sure it was on. I was rotating the bezel and nothing was happening. So now that I've restarted it, it's perfectly fine. But the responsiveness is certainly not as good as what you get on VoiceOver on the Apple Watch. I do like the fact that you've got the bezel so you can rotate and it does go click, click, click to move through applications or screens. So it does do that. But I remember coming across this phrase probably about a month ago and it was called minimum viable technology. And that's where a company produces something that they think, oh, let's just do a taster hardware or software implementation, see what happens. And I just have the feeling that this minimum viable technology is what they've whacked into Voice Assistant on the Samsung Watch because it just does enough to be usable, but it certainly doesn't go as far as what you can do with VoiceOver on the Apple Watch.
You see, this is what I was worried that you might say, if I'm honest. This is why I haven't put the money down yet on a Samsung Watch. Now, look, you have done a demo for us, which I'm very pleased that we can play because I think a lot of people would want to know how this actually works. So let's hear you demoing the Samsung Galaxy Watch, and in particular, that rotating bezel that you're talking about. Let's see how that works.
Welcome to this taster demo of the Samsung Galaxy Watch. And this one that I've currently purchased myself is the 46mm one. Let me do a quick physical description of the watch and then I'll do a brief demo of navigating the watch interface. So a physical description of the watch, it's 46mm in diameter. Around the outside of the glass at the top, you have a bezel that you can rotate left and right.
And of course, every time you rotate it, it goes click, 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 as in a physical click, click, click. In the middle of that bezel that rotates, you've got the rather large glass touch screen. And then the outsides of the actual watch around the bezel, if you like, and the side of the watch is all stainless steel. And then, of course, you've got your traditional watch band connections on either side. And the larger one, this one I've got 46mm, has a 22mm width band. And by default, by the way, you get a black watch rubber band with the actual watch when you buy it. And I believe as of this recording, the 46mm only comes in silver. Underneath, you've got a high quality plastic bottom of the watch, which also includes the key charger to charge it on its own little wireless charging stand. And of course, that's where all the other sensors are. And then when you've got it on your wrist, like I've currently got, on the side of the watch closest to your hand, you've got two buttons. The one closest to me, because I've got my left wrist in front of me, is the home button, and that's got a raised tactile surface, so it's very easy to feel. And then furthest away from me is another button, and that's the back button. And then in between those two buttons, you've got a raised area of the side of the watch that those buttons sit each side of. And that raised part is mirrored on the opposite side of the watch edge. Microphone closest to your wrist on the right hand side, and the left hand side is where the speaker is. As I said, the watch band that you get by default is just a normal rubber watch band with a pin that goes through one of the holes in the band to tighten it up. Okay, so that's basically a physical description of the watch itself. Now, I've currently got my Galaxy Watch connected to my TP-Link Bluetooth transmitter, which in turn is plugged into a Bluetooth speaker, just to make it a bit clearer to actually hear the voice on the recording. So I'm going to press the home button to wake the watch up. It's not going to say the time, all right? So if I touch the watch face with one finger.
It is 1:22 p.m.
Okay, it's just read out the time. So if I rotate the bezel to the left, I'll get notifications. If I rotate the bezel to the right, I'll get my widgets that are on there by default, or I've installed myself. So if I rotate the left with the bezel.
No notifications.
Says no notifications. If I rotate to the right.
It is 1:25 p.m.
Back to the time. Again to the right.
Weather page 3 of 17.
So weather page 3 of 17. So there are all the widgets from 3 to 16. I won't go through them all at the moment. And number 17 is to actually add a widget. And of course, those numbers then increase the more notifications I get to the left of the actual times. So 17, for example, could become 34, depending on how many notifications I've got and if I haven't cleared them or not. If you want to read any of these widgets screens, you could touch the screen with one finger, and you can also flick left and right on the screen if there's buttons on the screen as well to activate controls with a one finger double tap. So if I touch the middle of the screen now, it should read out the weather for today.
Narara, 1:25 p.m. Showers in the vicinity. Current temperature 21 degrees. Highest temperature 24 degrees. Lowest temperature 17 degrees. Probability of precipitation 42%. UV index moderate. Double tap to get weather information for this city.
I go back to the time by just pressing the home button.
It is 1:26 p.m.
And I press it again.
Apps. Rotate bezel to navigate apps. Page 1 of 4.
Okay, so rotate bezel to navigate apps. So if I rotate to the right.
Recent apps.
First of all, we've got recent apps. So if I keep rotating.
Messages.
Messages.
Phone.
Phone.
Contacts.
Contacts.
Email.
Email.
Samsung Health.
Samsung Health.
Galaxy apps.
Galaxy apps.
Settings.
Settings.
Find my phone.
Find my phone.
Next page button.
Next page.
Page 2 of 4.
And now we're going to page 2 of 4, etc. So I won't go through them all. Okay, so if I rotate back to the left.
Reminder. Previous page button. Page 1 of 4. Find my phone. Settings.
And I double tap on settings.
Settings.
And now I'm in settings. So if I touch my screen.
Watch faces. Watch faces. Watch always on.
So watch faces.
Sound and vibration. Sound and vibration. Mode, volume, ringtone.
Note, I'm saying flicking. I'm not rotating the bezel anymore. I'm actually using the touch screen. So flick to the right again.
Display, brightness, screen timeout.
And if I kept going, we would get down to accessibility. And that's, of course, where you can enable all the accessibility features on the Galaxy Watch. And the code back to the main home screen, I can either press home or I can press my back button to go back to the previous screen.
Page 1 of 4. Settings.
Okay, and I'm back on settings where I started from and pressing back again.
It is 1:30 p.m.
Okay, it takes me back to the main home screen with the time. If I double press the home button twice, 1, 2.
Bixby.
It brings up the Bixby interface. And because Bixby heard her voice, she just activated. So I'm going to touch the screen. That's her timing out. It's going to touch my watch face screen.
Mic button double tap to speak.
So mic button double tap to speak. One finger double tap. What's the time?
The local time is 1:30 p.m.
Okay, so that volume was actually quite soft, actually. So that's the time. And press the home button to go back to the main home screen.
It is 1:31 p.m.
If I hold in the home button, right now.
Watch options.
I've got watch options. One finger flip to the right.
Power off.
Power off.
Touch sensitivity off.
Touch sensitivity off. So I'm going to press the back button. When I'm back at the time on the main home screen, now I haven't quite worked out whether this is two swipes down with two fingers or one. If I just do one, nothing happens. If I do it twice, it always works. So swiping in with two fingers twice on the time.
Quick panel.
And it brings up the quick panel. And if I flick to the right.
Mobile network connected. Battery 30%. Bluetooth connected. Bluetooth headset connected. Flight mode off button. Volume 15 button. Do not disturb off button. Settings button. Find my phone button. Play music button. Water lock mode off button.
Then just press the home button. And I'm back to the watch face. If I touch the watch face with one finger.
It is 1:35 p.m.
I'm back to the time. And then when I want to put the watch to sleep, just put my hand over it.
Screen turned off.
And it turns the screen off. Okay, so that's done. So that's just a quick taste demo of the Samsung Galaxy Watch.
Well, I mean, that's a brilliant demo, David, because it really does highlight how the whole thing works. But before we talk about the S10, Robin, I know you've got a question about how this watch is built and how it looks.
Absolutely. And I just want to say that that is just one of a number of demos on the Galaxy Watch on David's IC. That's all one word. Podcast, so definitely check that out. Every couple of days a new gem comes down, another demo of, well, every kind of technology you can possibly imagine, so definitely go and check that out. But yeah,
great.
I
podcast.
Was interested, yeah, really good, in the form factor, because obviously there are other round Android watches, and obviously watches traditionally were round and the Apple Watch isn't. How nice is that form factor? I mean, obviously we've talked about the software not potentially being up to scratch quite yet, but how's the form factor compared to your numerous Apple Watches?
Well, my children and my wife absolutely love the look of the Samsung watch. So they actually say, well, why can't the Apple Watch look like that? Because it looks like a real watch. It looks like a high-end timepiece. It actually feels like a high-end timepiece. And the one that I've got is actually the 46mm one. So it's the big round one with the big bezel around the outside of it. It's stainless steel. I've just got the default band that came with it, but it looks like a really snazzy watch. So from that point of view, it's great. And I must say, using the bezel to navigate, to me, particularly when I'm outside and I've just finished washing the car and my hands are wet, turning the bezel, because it goes click, click, click when you turn it, is a lot easier than if you're trying to flick with, you know, the one finger flick left and right, or you've turned on crown navigation with voiceover. Because that digital crown on the Apple Watch is so tiny, you've still got to sort of reasonably grip it to be able to turn it. I mean, I know we've got the digital haptic feedback on the new one, but you've still got to hold on to it. Whereas with the bezel on the Galaxy Watch, you simply just almost just put your finger on the top of it and just turn it, and you can feel it go click, click, click. And because you're using voice assistant, it just reads out to you. So from that point of view, I actually like the interface. And one of the demos that I did was when you were putting in your PIN number, Yes, you can flick left and right and then one finger double tap on the number you want. But this is really, really cool. And I got very excited about this one because I'm a really techie geeky rat bag. Is you rotate to the number, pause for a second, and then it puts the number in automatically. So it's almost like you're mysteriously using a combination lock where you're putting the number.
Yeah.
That's really cool. So from that point of view, I love the hardware.
Cool. I have done much nose swiping on my watch face in my time when my hands have been dirty, but double tapping isn't quite so easy.
It comes under the category of too much information, right?
Yeah, I must admit, I'm doing the nose swiping thing a lot, and it's great when you want to know what time it is. Just whack your nose off your watch. But I think, you know, I've got what I call FFS. Now, don't worry, folks, I'm not referring to anything dangerous here. But I've got fat finger syndrome. So that's where the Apple Watch can be a problem. So I think this is a 44 millimeter one that I've got. This is the latest Apple Watch Series 4. And, you know, even it's quite small for my fingers, but, you know, it gets the job done. But, you know, going by what you're saying about this whole slowing down over a period of time and not opening all the apps, it doesn't sound like the most ideal of experiences. It sounds like, though, it's on the right path. And I think, you know, the idea of that sort of hardware bezel sounds brilliant. I don't think Apple would ever do that, but you never know, But I am intrigued to hear what happens in the future with it. So now you've got one of these, we can just come to you and ask, and it means I don't have to buy one. Excellent.
Indeed. Absolutely.
Right. Let's talk about the S10, because this is something I have bought. That's all I can say at the moment. I'm like, okay. I mean, I think from a sighted person's perspective, this is probably the greatest phone, right? I think next to the Hawaii, what's that new one? P30 Pro. But
Huawei.
Is that how you say it? Huawei. I don't know.
That's the grass skirt model. Yeah.
That's right. Well, the Samsung S10 is a great phone, right? Without doubt, it's a great phone. But from a blind person's perspective, where do you stand on it, David?
I am actually quite surprised how well I've actually been using it, I must say. So I'll just go back a little bit and say there are one big thing that currently sort of, I guess, irritates me with the S10, and that's the fingerprint sensor, because I had to actually ask my sighted son, and it said, where's the fingerprint sensor? And he says, oh, Dad, it's underneath the screen. You actually can't feel it. So that's number one. Mm-hmm. When I was setting up, I had to sort of get my son to actually keep reminding me where I was touching on the screen, even though you do get haptic feedback. But now that I've set up both the Face ID and the Touch ID, I still can't get it, because I touch it vibrates, and then it comes back and says, you're not completely covering the sensor. Can you please cover the sensor with your finger? It's like, I'm trying! And it keeps going round and round. So I end up using the Face ID, which I must say works for me more than my Face ID on my iPhone X. But sometimes...
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I love Face ID. I hate Face ID on my iPhone X. I love Face ID on the S10.
I hate them both.
Well, I hate them both as well, but if I had to put that with one of them...
Well, the reason being, because I think on the Samsung, at least my experience is, I wear sunglasses all the time, and whenever I... because I don't, you know, issues with light, so I wear sunglasses, and that confuses the phone. Now, I did set it up wearing the sunglasses... But the problem is, if, for example, I take them off and then I try and hold the phone up, it just doesn't get it. And then I try the fingerprint thing and I get no match, and then eventually nothing, and then I'm locked out or whatever. And it seems like a bit of a faff. Whereas at least with the iPhone, it kind of gets it eventually. I'd say I get better response from the iPhone than I do the Samsung. But okay, so once you're in, what's it like?
I quite like it, because there's quite a few things I like about the Android, and I'm probably going to be actually forbidden from the Apple pyramid from this point onwards now. So,
I should kick out of the magic circle.
I know, that's the one. So I absolutely love the fact that you've got, so I've set it up, so I've got my main home screen with the apps that I use. I've put the app icon down the bottom so I can quickly get into all my app screens. It's beautiful to flick between all the app screens. I love the recents function where you can close down all apps Apple if you want to. All the apps that I tend to use are reflected quite nicely from my iPhone. So for example, things like Audible, the Kindle app, the ABC Listen app here for Australian Broadcasting Commission here in Australia, all the apps I tend to use are replicated on, you know, Android / Samsung, and they work really nicely. I love the notifications. I love widgets. I like having a widget on my home screen, for example, the weather. So rather than just the icon saying weather, it actually says weather, and being here in Australia, it's Celsius. And so, it, you know, it'll say 24 degrees Celsius and so on. So that's actually really cute.
I will just say that in Britain, it's never, ever said 24 degrees Celsius to me ever.
And you probably only have to worry about the one number, the temperature. We have to worry about rain, wind, sleet.
Fog. Yes. Yeah. That's just one day.
That's right.
So look, I'm actually enjoying it. I mean, it's the first time I've ever felt, because I've had older Android phones. I had like a one of the early Nexuses, and I've had a few other ones. And they've been sluggish and temperamental. And I must say, I've also tried TalkBack, and I just can't get my head around. I mean, I can, but I just don't like the angled gestures. You know, your one finger flick up and to the left and to the right and down to the left and so on. Whereas the voice assistant screen reader, which is the default one, of course, on the Samsung Galaxy, it works very nicely. And it's got a few little tricks about going straight to the notification center and stuff like that. So that works really nicely. So overall, I'm really enjoying my Android / Samsung experience, I think.
Okay, so Robin, I'm sorry, I'm kind of jumping in here ahead of you on all of this, because I know you've got questions as well, but one thing that gets me is, right, so you've got the Samsung screen reader, which is built in, ready to go, and this is Samsung's take on TalkBack, right? Mm-hmm. But if you wanted TalkBack, you can go to the Android store, the store, and go and get it if you want it. The Android accessibility suite is what you'd be downloading, and it's got it in it, among other things. The one thing I found was, although the angle gestures are a bit annoying, like the swipe down and then left to go back, I've got quite used to using it on the Google Pixel 3 I was playing with, right? So I'm like, okay, quite like this. Then I go to the Samsung one, and I'm looking for the same kind of gesture, and I can't find one. Is there a way to go back with Samsung screen reader?
No. So
what's that about?
So what I tend to do is I tend to have I've set up my voice assistant so that if I hold down my volume up and volume down keys, I toggle voice assistant on and off. And then if I want to then go and run TalkBack, I can just sneak into settings accessibility and go and turn on TalkBack that way. So I can switch between both of them if I want to. The one thing I have switched off on the voice assistant on the Samsung, which drives me absolutely batty, are the blasted audio sounds, because it goes bing and bang, and it's like
terrible.
Okay, I know I'm moving on the screen. You don't have to overdo it. Whereas the sounds on TalkBack are very gentle, notification type sounds, a lot nicer. But the voice assistant ones are absolutely appalling.
I mean, they are quite different. I mean, even though it's all cut from the same cloth, TalkBack in my mind has more to it than the screen reader on Samsung. The one difference I found, and I'm hoping you'll tell me different here, is direct touch typing. So when you actually want to type on your screen, with the Samsung screen reader, I can type away merrily. I don't have to. I am quite lucky. I've kind of learned to touch type on the phone, even though I can't see the screen.
Even with FFS?
Yeah. Despite my FFS, yeah. I did buy the Samsung S10 big, so, you know. But, you know, typing's not too bad. However, if I put TalkBack on, although I prefer TalkBack because I've got the back gesture and I can kind of work out how to get around a bit quicker, I can only type by sort of finding the letter S and then double tapping on it, finding T, double tap, and I can't do direct touch on it. Please tell me I'm wrong.
I haven't found a way around that either. Because you're right, I can do touch typing with the voice assistant. I can't do it with TalkBack. There may be a feature that I'm missing that I haven't found yet. But, yeah, that's why I tend to switch back to the voice assistant most of the time, because it's a bit more bearable, particularly with the on-screen keyboard. I must say I've had the occasional freeze every now and again, but, you know, it's not too bad. Two things that really stand out for me with the Samsung, though, or Android in general, is you can choose your own text-to-speech voice. Hooray! And I absolutely still love the Eloquence voice. I know it's robotic, but it's very quick and responsive. So that's from the Code Factory, if you want to buy it from the Play Store. and absolutely love that one. The second Hue...
$16.99, by the way. $16.99.
Just saying. Oh, look, it's only money. Jeez. I just went and bought a Galaxy watch for $649 Australian. I mean, there it is.
But the, you know, the thing is, so, okay, the Eloquence voice I'll give you, right? Okay, I would buy that. I think that's fine. But I wanted the Ava voice. Everyone loves the Ava voice, right? So I like Ava. All my devices have got Ava on it, apart from my Mac. I've changed that to Serena. I like Serena. But on Android, I wanted Ava. I had to buy it. £3.89. I'm thinking, I don't have to buy this anywhere else. Why have I got to buy it here? What's going on?
I'm so pleased that Android users whinge about paying for things eventually, because you just get everything for free all the time. So I think it's karma myself.
It's payback, is it?
That's it. And the other thing I want to point out with Android too is that you can assign your physical buttons to do things. So I've got my volume up button that actually answers an incoming call, and my power button on the Samsung S10 hangs up a phone call. So I've got physical buttons to do what I sometimes hate to do, and that's answering and hanging up on a phone call, particularly when I first got my iPhone.
That's a great feature, actually.
Yeah, it's great that you can just assign physical buttons. And I wish that was something that you could do with the iPhone.
For me, I haven't used Android nearly as extensively as iOS, and I'm conflicted because I am a techie person, and I would love the ability to be able to do that sort of thing, to customize your experience, to do things exactly the way you like, which iOS isn't really all about. But the thing I most love, or, you know, love more than that, is that Apple's basically got your back. You know, you know that you'll have a good experience, certainly with all the first party apps, apart from maybe FaceTime when that was updated on the Mac. There were quite a few unlabeled buttons there in the group calling for feature. But, I mean, how niche is that?
And the mail now as well, Robin. Let's not forget mail. The buy button just says button now. Helpful.
Whoa, I haven't seen that, but yeah. So, okay, but, I mean, how niche, really, you know, compared to first-party apps saying that it's not supported by their own screen reader. So, yeah, it's what people want out of a device, really. And
yeah, that's true.
Can you use Samsung? Can you use, you know, Pixel phones? Absolutely you can. It just might be a slightly more patchy experience.
Yeah, look, I'd have to say that, I mean, overall, I think I have to work a little bit harder with the Samsung phone than I do with my iPhone. Now, that may be because I've been using, you know, the iPhone since 2009 versus using the S10 for about 3 months now. So that definitely comes into it. The other thing, just jumping back to the Mac for a minute, Robin, is that I've noticed lately, and I don't know if I'm imagining this more and more lately, but when you use Safari on the Mac, particularly with online apps these days, like client management systems and that sort of stuff, it doesn't seem to be doing as well with drop-down combo boxes, expandable items, all that sort of stuff. Sometimes I find myself going back to, dare I say it, Windows and a screen reader to do that sort of stuff. So I just wish Apple would put a little bit more love, particularly with the web browser stuff, back on the Mac now, because it's starting to let me down a little bit lately.
Well, I mean, I've mentioned this in the past. I'm a Mac person, but I have Windows running on it as well. And I do find myself using the different, you know, Chrome versus Safari for different things. Mm. So yeah, absolutely. But it does go the other way as well. Sometimes Safari works better with a particular website. But yeah, I have noticed that as well. And I hope that will get up, you know, improve in a kind of a point update.
Yeah, and it's also the problem with that is that, you know, you've got the issue here of websites versus operating systems, and, you know, the websites themselves probably haven't been set up properly or, you know, done in the right way that makes it awkward for us to use them. We can't really blame Apple or, you know, JAWS or whoever. You know, we can't blame them for that. I mean, this is just, unfortunately, sometimes the websites just are not built properly for us. And, you know, I've been spending my weekend getting to grips with Mac, mainly because of Mr. Christofferson, MBE over there, because, you know, he's been telling me how wonderful it is, and I'm actually starting to really, really like it. So don't tell me it's terrible, David, or I've wasted my weekend. But no, I am really liking the experience. Now, look, before you go, because I want to, so much we could talk about with you, please come back on the show at some point, because there's so much we want to talk about. But we're going to sort of change tack a bit here and talk about Daisy players. Now, I'll be honest, I kind of thought Daisy players, sadly, were kind of end of life. But there's a new one coming out.
There is. And look, I'm really excited about this one. It's called the Envoy Connect. And what it basically is, it's a very basic Daisy player. So literally, I'm holding it in my hand at the moment. So it's about the size of, can I say an old transistor radio size? Can I say what it is?
Like a VHS tape
the
size?
The old tranny. Oh, yeah. Or even a cassette tape. How about a cassette tape?
Oh, okay.
C90 cassette
tape. Oh, I'm in heaven here.
Yep, that's it. So you've got two rows of buttons. So you've got a volume up and a volume down. These are all tactile marked. In the middle at the top row, you've got a bookshelf button to switch between your books. And you've got a sleep button with a button on a tactile dot. And then the second line is simply rewind, play pause or off, and fast forward or, you know, go to the next chapter. So it's a very basic thing. It's charged via a micro USB cable. It's also got a solar panel on the back. So you whack it on your kitchen bench or somewhere in the sunshine and let it charge that way as well.
So Australia only then, not the UK.
Well, it does have the micro USB charging. So if you don't have any sunlight.
Does it work in the snow?
Well, if you
lots of sun can be, yeah.
Of course it's bright.
Well, that's true. And it's also got a very loud speaker as well. So the speaker's quite good. You can plug, dare I say, it's got a 3.5mm headphone jack. Hint, hint, hint.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, absolutely. Very, very high technology. And look, it works beautifully. It's not, it doesn't have all the other stuff. So it doesn't have, you know, sentence, line, paragraph, navigation. You can't bookmark, you can't increase the speed. But for a system where here at Vision Australia, you can download a book using the iAccess kiosk software from the Vision Australia library, or if you're a person who doesn't want to use that on Windows or and or you're a Mac user, you just plug it in like a normal mass storage device, comes up with the volume name, you create a folder, you just expand or, you know, unzip your Daisy books, pop them in the folder, and hey presto, off you go. So for $75 Australian, you've got yourself a full-blown Daisy playing device.
So I was going to ask how that compares to something like the Victus Stream, but it's basically the price.
Correct. And yes, that's right. And look, we've got a lot of people that I know that find, you know, the standard Daisy players, you know, the desktop ones, all the Victus Streams, all the other Daisy players, they're too complicated. You put this in somebody's hand and you say, these are the buttons you've got to worry about. And most people, particularly people that, you know, are over 70 or 80 years old, some of them don't like technology. And this one, they absolutely love. I mean, my couple of my friends, I mean, sort of in Queensland, they keep ringing me up all the time about technology. I've actually managed to actually get them onto one of these. And they love it because they normally get their relatives or their sons or whatever else to copy the books onto them from their computer. And then off they go. And they like it because it is so straightforward. They don't want to increase the voice. They just want to listen to a book and not have to worry about how they got there.
And so being Daisy, it can obviously support audio and text only. Does this do both?
No. It only does. So it's only audio narration. So there's no, you know, I mean, unless you get an MP3 file that, you know, is the recorded synthetic speech. But no, it's basically has to be a, what was the expression? What is it? Daisy, is it Daisy 3 or Daisy 2? Yeah, I can't remember all the formats now, but basically it's audio only.
Yeah.
So it's not text-based or not text-to-speech. So
yep.
Hopefully that might change because we've got a lot of online newspapers which are text only, not MP3. They're Daisy text, not Daisy audio. But at the moment, the player just supports Daisy audio.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you want for that kind of money? I mean, that's pretty good. So you can put files onto it. Can you put a USB or an SD card into it?
You can put a little mini SD card into it, yes. So you can expand it out, and I think it expands out to 128 gigabytes.
Which wow.
So when you think about a standard Daisy book, let's say between, you know, 150 to 200 megabytes, then even on a 4 gig internal memory, I think it might be 4 or 8, but, you know, whacking on 128 gigabytes, it's like, how many books would you really like to go on your holidays? And you can fiddle on them there. So it's actually really good. I mean, I personally find that I want to run mostly human being speech at about 3 times normal speed. But for sometimes for me, particularly with fantastic narrators, I don't mind running it at normal speed, particularly on books that I really enjoy listening to.
And is this available outside of Australia?
It is. So the Vision Australia store, we actually sell globally. So it does sound like we only sell in Australia. But if you order from the Vision Australia store, which is simply shop.visionaustralia.org, then you can order one of these little cheap Daisy players, the Envoy Connect, for $75 Australian and get it shipped to you. So, yes, we do sell right around the world, so you can grab one of these if you want to.
And how's that website work with a Mac?
Goodness me. It works absolutely beautifully. Remember I mentioned the fact that I had 5 Apple Watches. Would you like to know how many Macs I've got?
Have you lost count?
I have. It's greater than 5 anyway.
So that works out at about £40, roughly, for that. That's not bad for a little Daisy player. I'm going to get one of those.
Fantastic.
That's my latest gadget, I think. Because, you know, it's funny. I'm doing the fingerprint course for Braille at the moment. Mm-hmm. And it comes in Daisy. And I'm thinking, you know, getting the files onto something to play, just that I can listen to out and about, that's portable, mm-hmm. it would be great. I mean, the phone, this is the thing that I go back to about the phone. Yes, the phone can do everything, right? Mm-hmm. You can listen to your Daisy books on it. It's all very wonderful. But all of that contributes to your battery going down and down and down over the course of a day. Mm. And if you can just have something like that, that's just there, you can just plug your headphones into and just escape from the world for a minute or two. Mm. That's brilliant for that price. So, yeah, I think that's going to be quite popular, David. Hopefully the order's stacked up because our Tech Talk audience are kind of happy. They're a bit trigger happy on the old buy now button. Yeah.
Very good. So that sounds good. I'm glad to hear. But no, look, it really is a good device. And like I said, $75 or £40 UK, it really is a fantastic basic Daisy player.
Absolutely.
So remind us of your podcast. And also, I believe you've got some other things coming up as well.
I do. So I've got my official podcast, which is my own personal one, and that's the I See Various Technologies from a Blind Person's Perspective podcast, which you can find on iTunes or your favorite podcatcher. So that's that one. I also do one which is called VA Cast. So it stands for Vision Australia Podcasts. And that's where I do product evaluations and demonstrations from the Vision Australia store itself here in Sydney and Parramatta. So, again, if you search for VA Cast, it's just vacast.podbean.com. And the third one is my Talking Tech show, which is a weekly Talking Tech 15-minute radio program on Vision Australia Radio. And again, if you stick in Talking Tech in your favourite podcatcher, you'll find that as well. But I'm also doing stuff. There's a thing on our shop.visionaustralia.org website called the Tech Blog, which is actually David's Tech Blog. And when we'd run workshops at the Vision Store, normally every couple of weeks or so, we actually record them video and audio on Zoom, and then we make them available via the website. So if people can't attend on there today or can't log in via the online stream, we've got all the podcasts and got all the workshops that we do online on the Tech Blog on the shop site as well. So various ways of getting to know and join in on all the stuff that I do and do for Vision Australia.
Absolutely brilliant. Well, look, come back soon because there is more to empty out of that brain, yeah. I'm sure. I think we're all really keen to find out how you got on in a few weeks and maybe in a month's time with the Galaxy Watch. Will it be on eBay?
No. Once I buy them, hang on to them. I'm also buying the Samsung Galaxy Buds in a few weeks' time too, so expect that to come out. And I'm also doing a side-by-side comparison podcast in about 2 weeks on the Apple Watch versus the Galaxy Watch as well.
Oh, nice. I will tell you, I got a delivery on Friday. I had no idea what it was. You know, sometimes you get these cards through the letterbox and you're like, I didn't order any parcels. What's my wife been buying now? And then eventually I realised it was for me, and it was the Samsung Galaxy Buds. Uh-huh. Because I got them free with the upgrade, because I upgraded my contract, got the S10, and they gave you the free Galaxy Buds with it. I think you're going to like them.
We'll have to share notes.
I think you're going to like them. I'm not going to talk about them just now, but I will say, the first thing you should do is play with ambient mode. That's all I'm going to say.
Okay, cool.
I'll leave it there. David, thanks for coming on.
You're welcome.
Thanks, David.
We get your email every day. Oh, yes, we do. Here's your mail today. Oh, we get tons of emails. Tons and tons and tons and tons and tons and tons. Hey, that was almost working out. It's a little song there. Right, Robin, let's get into the email inbox then. Producer Andy is here.
Hello. Hello. Hello.
Hey, now, look, Andy. I know you've got lots of emails to read through, but I have to start off by saying, We get lots and lots of audio comments as well in through email. And one in particular that has come in is from Damien, who sent us his comments. Now, look, I have to be honest here, Robin. We've been a bit bad on this one. Or maybe it's just me. I'll take the blame on this one. But we haven't managed to fit it into any of the shows. So I thought, this time round, we're going to start off with Damien's comment, okay? Because that seems fair, right? So that's what we're going to do. So we're going to kick off with Damien's comment. Damien, welcome to Tech Talk.
Hello, Steve and other Tech Talkers. It's been more than 3 years since I listened to your podcast regularly. I wanted to share with you some thoughts on Narrator and Android. Let me start with Narrator. Since August, I've been testing the latest Windows. Well, I was a Windows Ice tester before. It was more than 9 years of being a member of the Windows Ice team. Anyway, I believe it will be sooner than anyone think that Narrator will become a screen reader of choice for blind computer users. There is a great team working on this part of Windows, and I think we can expect a lot. I've heard some gossips, maybe, that they will open Narrator to scripting. If it's true, I think we will have really powerful screen reader. And even more, if they will include AI, which also is a possibility, then if we put those factors together and add an ability to do things which other users or users from outside the Microsoft cannot do because they don't have that knowledge, well, this may be something which will put Narrator in position of primary screen reader for Windows users. And I believe it will happen in no longer than a year or maybe two. But it goes really fast. Now let me go to Android. Steven, you keep talking that if one is blind and wants to use Android, then the only choice is to use Pixel or Samsung 10. I mean, top of the tops. I think conditions are not that severe. I believe one can try quite a budget phones like Samsung A6, which I currently use, or telephones made by Chinese company named Xiaomi. Xiaomi has some models which are in Android One program. And the most important thing actually for blind Android users is, as I believe, to be as close to pure Android as possible. That's why I recommend using phones in Android One program, or as you recommend, Samsung phones. But if you use Samsung, you actually don't need to use super extra high-end models. It's enough to use models with at least Android 8. That's just to make it, in my opinion, more precise. Anyway, I thought that when Sean will go away from the show, it will be not as good as it is now, that quality will suffer. But it didn't. You found really a very good co-host to your show. And that's really good news for me because I enjoy your program very much. Have a good day and many interesting shows.
Wow, well, thank you for that, Damien. Lots to unpick there, Robin. First of all, apparently you're quite good.
I don't know why we've taken so long to play that one. That was a really good contribution. Thanks, Damien and Dog. Really good. I appreciate it. Thanks.
I don't think the dog agrees with his views on Android, though, if I'm honest. I got the impression the dog was getting a bit annoyed there. Well, I think we should kick off with the narrator point first, actually. I think he's right. I think narrator certainly is becoming a force to be reckoned with. I don't quite think it's there yet, but I think it's getting there. I think it's certainly a lot more than it used to be. It used to be the screen reader to get other screen readers. You get narrator turned on so you could go and download NVDA or JAWS. That's not so much the case anymore. And there are cases where I've found narrator better to find my way around a computer than using JAWS itself, especially around Windows' own operating system. So I think it is a force. I think adding scripting to it would be good. But we shall see.
Yeah.
And on to the point about Android. I know I get criticised about this a lot. Usually any time I say the word Android, hate mail just floods in. And that's, you know, okay. I have not been fair to Android, I think, for a long time. Although, as I say that, I'd say I've probably been as fair as I could be based on my experiences of it. I think it has gotten to a point now where you can't really say one is better than the other. I think both are good for different purposes. And I do take Damien's point that although I do talk often about the experience of, say, the top-end phones like your Samsung S10 that I've got at the minute and I think is brilliant, not everyone can afford that. So what are the alternatives? And there are a lot of alternatives, Robin.
Absolutely. So he talked about Android One. So to explain to people, these are handsets that have a pure Android experience. And not only that, the handset manufacturers have, you know, cooperated with Google or kind of followed their standards and confirm or kind of guarantee that you'll get updates, at least two updates to the operating system in the 2 years after you've bought the handset. So it won't immediately fall out of date as the new operating system comes out, and the vast majority of handsets won't allow you to upgrade. It's just the way they are with Android. The higher end ones do. So I've done a bit of homework for affordable Android One. That's the pure Android experience handsets. And do you want me to give you a quick list?
Yeah, please.
So you've got Nokia 7.1, Nokia 7.2, Nokia 9, PureView, that's one word if you're searching for it, and PureView is where the camera in the back meets a certain Nokia gold standard, so have a look at that one. Motorola One, Xiaomi A2, I don't think that's the same as Xiaomi, but it might be, because he was talking about, I haven't seen it written down, so I don't know whether Xiaomi is the same as Xiaomi.
Is this me trying to say Hawaii?
So LG G7 One, and that one is an O-N-E word at the end. So LG G7 is the model, and then space O-N-E, and that tells you that it's an Android One experience, and Moto G7 One as well. So the Moto have done one as well. That's just been announced.
Okay. Right, look, let's get to some other emails. Thank you, Damien, for that. I know you've been in touch again. We've got lots more from you to come in the next week or so. But for now, let's get to some other emails. Andy, what's poor people saying?
Well, I'll start this week's emails by following on from Louise's email last week about the best wireless headphones for her PC.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Rod Carney would just like to point out that AirPods are a bit of a Marmite product. Yeah, to start with, it is essential, he says, to have been born with suitable ears that AirPods do not drop out of. I do most of my headphone listening when I wake in the early hours. AirPods in bed are not a good idea, he says.
Oh, come on, Rod. Where's your sense of adventure? Come on, you lose an AirPod in your bed, you spend the next 3 days looking for it. It's fun.
Use a bit of Marmite and that'll stick in nicely then.
That's true, yeah. Yeah, put some Marmite on the outside of it and it'll stick right to the bed. Just, you know, maybe try explaining that onto your wife beforehand. That could be an interesting conversation. Anyway, sorry.
Shall we move on quickly with that? Yes, Brian Smith also messages in on this topic. He says, hi, peeps. Just a quickie with regards to headphone lag. I had this problem ages ago and had no idea what caused it, but I cured it by playing soft music or sea sounds, etc., in the background on my computer.
That's a good idea.
This kept the connection live, and so cut out the lag of the speech from my screen reader. Hope this helps. So a little bit of soft ocean music in the background might
help that problem. Just keep the sound alive, Robin. That's not a bad idea.
Yeah, I mean, my only comment there would be that that will prevent the egregious shutting down, powering down of the Bluetooth headset, so that you'll have several seconds before, you know, voiceover or whatever it is starts to pipe up. But it won't sort out, you know, when it is powered up and you're just typing away, for example, or arrowing through things, that micro delay. And you really do suffer from that on lower end headphones. So, you know, the higher end, the more expensive, that lag, for me anyway, becomes tolerable to the point of, you know, almost disappearing with the new AirPods. So, yeah, but that's a really, really good suggestion. And if you're not using it for a screen reader, if you're just using it for the occasional thing, maybe to change the track or whatever it is, or just to start a say all in a document, because that obviously, you know, that's only one command that you've sent there, and everything should be fine after that point. But yeah, really good tip.
And there's just one more on this from Alan Milne, who also continues on saying, "Hi team, I find that for mobile headphones on a home PC, it is better to use wireless rather than Bluetooth headphones. I use Philips wireless headphones that have a home cradle that also acts as a charger for headphones and can use them for at least a day without charge. These kinds of headphones need no pairing or setting up of the PC, as the home cradle plugs directly into the headphone socket of your PC or your speakers. They can operate much further away than Bluetooth headphones can. I have the home cradle next to the PC in a bedroom and can access the PC from any room in the house, upstairs and downstairs, and in the front and back gardens as well. The particular model I have also allowed additional headphones to work from the same home cradle so that more than one person can be listening to the PC output." That's from Alan.
Yeah, that's not actually the worst idea in the world, Alan, because, these what you're talking about, these are the ones you would normally be using with your television. A lot of people buy these for TV so they can listen to TV in bed at night, because you can sort of hook them up to the TV, you have the cradle beside the television, and you can wear the headphones in bed comfortably. You could, of course, plug that into anything, and it works off radio frequency, RF, rather than Bluetooth. So you will get that continuous connection. You might get a little bit of, you know, radio frequency in between it if you're travelling around the house with them on, but if that doesn't bother you, then that might be not a bad idea.
I think it's genius. I think that's a brilliant idea.
Okay, Andy. Well, look, we'll leave it there for now. Thank you so much for coming in, Andy. We're reading through the emails. That was
anytime at all.
I'm glad you said that, because I'd like you back next week if that's okay. Lots of emails we didn't get to this week. We will get to them on next week's Tech Talk. Thank you so much for listening. Robin, thank you.
So much to say, so little time. Thanks.